Hello. Welcome to this first thoughts edition of the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast, presented by Roni's Own Media and Roni'sOwn.com. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. Your hosts are Jeff and Colleen Roni from Orange County, California. Hi there. There are a number of ways that you can stay connected and interact with the show. Our main website address is onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our Twitter name is OUAT Podcast. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/OUAT Podcast. Our email address is feedback@onceuponatimepodcast.com. And the address to our forum is forum.onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our blog web address is aclosereloukouat.ronizone.com. And our voicemail line phone number is 657-333-0626. Thank you for listening, connecting, and interacting with us. And now, on with the show.
Welcome, everyone, to First Thoughts for the Once Upon a Time episode, The Return. My name is Jeff Roni, and I'm joined by
Colleen Roni.
I can tell you it was hard for Colleen to contain herself through this episode.
It was indeed.
It was like watching someone on a roller coaster, but sitting in a front room. So anyhow, it was a wild episode.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. So. It was absolutely phenomenal. I loved this episode so much on so many levels. It really played with my emotions a lot.
Yep. There were people that were tweeting me. Someone said, make sure that Colleen has a respirator and yeah, all these things. So it was, yeah. And
yeah.
After last night the Ian Bailey voicemail we got, this has just been a magical weekend.
It has been. It's been beyond magical. It's been awesome.
Yes.
So yeah, Ian, we got the magic here. Yeah. Apparently we have the magic here.
Yes.
So we can help you with your little problem there, Pinocchio.
Right.
I'm just going to throw that out there real quick.
Okay. All right.
Though I did fall for half a second thinking, maybe he is Balefire.
Yes.
And then...
It was a great twist.
It was a brilliant twist. And, Robert Carlyle deserves an Oscar for that performance. Because he actually made me really mad at him at the beginning. I mean, really mad. I was like, oh my gosh. How can you be that just evil?
Mm-hmm.
It was frustrating. I was like, no, I love him. I love Rumpelstiltskin. I love, Mr. Gold. I can't handle that. It was frustrating. And then the scene between him and August, just holy cow. I sat there and started crying.
Yeah.
I'm just laying that out there.
Right.
But it was brilliant. And it was such, there were so many twists and turns and just, it was so epic.
And I know that we have Evil Regals listening, and we have Goshers listening, and we have all the different shippers listening.
Yep.
And it is interesting to see when the quote unquote evil characters get happy and feel that they're in control. When the good characters are in pain and turmoil, it's just kind of interesting to watch the different flow between the two sides.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to just toss that out initially.
Yeah.
So
shall we go through it?
I have made my list. You're not a list maker, but
no,
you have a pretty good memory.
I have a pretty good memory. So, yeah.
I wanted to talk about the copper phone.
Oh, yeah.
That August used.
It was interesting.
To call. At the beginning, we didn't know who he was calling.
No.
But I would imagine that he was calling Mother Superior.
Yes.
At the school.
Yes. That's what I was thinking, too.
And the school was a new location that we have not seen before.
Mm-hmm,
anyway, he called to accelerate the plan.
Yes.
And he has mentioned the plan a number of times. He said, that's the plan. And so the word plan, I kind of want to set on a high shelf of words that we need to really pay attention to.
Okay.
Because plans are put together, they're well thought out, and they have a direction.
Yes.
So Rumpelstiltskin has a plan.
Yes, he does.
But it also seems like some other person or persons has a plan to undo him.
Right.
It would appear.
Right.
So
well, what's interesting is we know now from this episode why Rumpelstiltskin created the curse.
Right. Correct.
And it's one of those things you kind of go, okay, I get why you did it. It's still wrong. It's still very wrong.
Right.
But I totally get why he did it.
It was very interesting that if you kind of take a step farther and farther back, why the curse was created. And now we know.
We now know, right.
But initially, it was for the evil queen to wreak revenge upon Snow White. But actually, Rumpelstiltskin kind of stood back and farther and watched this whole thing play out and then began to offer these little suggestions.
Right.
To cause these people to play into his hand perfectly.
Exactly.
To get... And actually, he sidestepped the... He is not suffering. But the evil queen, you know, there was a warning. You know, Maleficent said, listen, this is a curse, end all curses. What are you doing?
Right, right.
And Rumpelstiltskin just kind of sits back because he created it.
Right.
But he didn't enact it.
No, he didn't.
So.
But yes. And that'll be interesting to see how he... Well, obviously Maleficent had it. So how did she end up with it? If he created it, how did she end up with it?
Yeah.
So.
All right. So when August and Henry were out waiting to...
At like the lumberyard. Kind of around... What looked like a lumberyard to me.
Yeah. And they were waiting for the old kind of good crook, bad crook come in the front to to get the attention away from the back part of the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting that August brought up improvisation. And the first thing I thought of was a puppet show, that kind of a thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Initially you would think, well, it's acting and they're actors, so that's not really whatever. But I mean, honestly, I thought about puppetry.
Did you really?
I did.
See, and I didn't even pick up on that at all. I was just fascinated by where were we going with this.
And I try not to force it. I honestly don't. I try not to force it. So when August was walking through the back part of the shop, there's two things I noticed. I thought I saw Jiminy Cricket's magnifying glass.
Oh, interesting.
That was on top of the war room table.
It's very possible that yes, that I think you're absolutely right that is the one, because he used that before to look closely at the
lamp. The lanolin, right?
Well, the lanolin thing, but I don't remember him using it for lanolin. I remember him looking very closely at the genie lamp through that magnifying glass.
Yes. And I also noticed a shoe shine box. It just kind of stood out. It was yellow and red, and it really kind of stood out.
It looked like it said shrink on the side.
What I saw was shoebox, but it may...
Okay, maybe it said shoebox, but it really quickly, you know, I was trying to look for other things, and so I kind of glossed over that. But it looked like it said shrink or something. Maybe it said shoebox, I don't know. But yeah, I did notice the shoebox itself.
August also mentioned maps.
Yes.
And I wondered if maybe he had dealings somehow with Jefferson as well.
Oh, yeah.
Since Jefferson was this amateur cartographer.
Right, right.
He said he was.
Right. Well, so. And what we thought about too is, you know, we've had this conversation this weekend, is we've talked about the fact that what if Jefferson has plotted where he can go, like he's tested the boundaries of where he can go before he starts feeling a weird feeling or something, you know what I mean? So he knows what the boundary is of Storybrooke better than maybe most people would. And that's why he was out walking the road he was walking when he grabbed or enticed Mary Margaret to his house.
Right.
So, you know, another thing, I think we brought this up also on the show, is the fact that this place seems to be unplottable. Maybe that was, you know, wasn't that one of our listeners' voicemail or email where we had, you know, it's unplottable and you have to know
Hogwarts,
where the portal is.
Yeah,
like Hogwarts. So I kind of agree with that. I think that fits very nicely with the whole plan of what's going on.
So then Catherine mentioned that she was put in a basement.
Yes.
That she was drugged.
Yes.
And then later was left at a field at the edge of town.
Yes.
Now, just that the edge of town reminded me of Emma being left
on the side of the road.
Side of the road. The basement could have been next to Belle.
Right, right. That's what I thought, too.
In that area.
Well, because Dr. Whale was standing right there, and he had that devious look on his face. So I kind of wonder if maybe he knew about it all along.
Right.
He's a little... I'm still curious to know who he is going to end up being in Fairytale World.
I did not have a chance to talk about it last night, but I did want to throw this theory out. And if I've said it before, I'm sorry. But if Dr. Whale is not Monstro, which is a huge leap, I understand.
Right, right.
Possibly he will stand in the way of Pinocchio doing something important, because Monstro captured, in effect, Pinocchio and
imprisoned him,
right? So it is possible that Dr. Whale possibly is the imprisoner of these people.
Yeah.
Whoever they are.
Maybe he knows about Belle. Maybe because he seems to know what's going on in the hospital. He's on Regina's speed dial.
Right.
So and vice versa. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's some sort of enforcer of the, you know, imprisonment stuff. I don't know.
As Monstro did.
Right.
In the story of Pinocchio.
Right.
So that's just my two cents.
No, that's fantastic.
I noticed the ball in Mr. Gold's shop
that
actually he was holding when he was talking to Regina.
Yes.
And then he put it in a little, I swear it looked like a basketball hoop, but it was a holder for this ball. And then we saw it later in Fairytale Land.
Balefire playing with it, yeah.
And it appeared to me that it was after the Ogre's Wars.
Yes.
Because there was no red in the sky or no
fire
or anything.
He said that. He said that afterwards. We did see him tell Balefire later that he, look what I did for you. I stopped the Ogre War. I was the one who put the peace treaty between, you know, the war. I stopped the war. I brought thousands of children home. But what's interesting, let's get back a little bit to the conversation between him and Regina. He said, it's not like you can turn him into a snail and crush him under your boot. And then that's exactly what he did to the townsperson that, you know, was the villager that was dealing with Balefire when Balefire tripped and fell in front of his donkey.
So let's kind of break this down. There's a couple of things that can change something large into something small.
Yes.
So we've seen the bad fairy dust
that
Snow White had that turned trolls, or a troll in the case we saw.
Three of them,
Into
cockroaches.
Cockroaches,
right.
Which can be crushed.
Right.
This time, we saw Rumpelstiltskin use magic.
Right. Use his force, his dark power.
Right.
To shrink him down to a snail.
Right. So,
and then step on him. That's what I was talking about earlier. I looked at that and I was like, I cannot believe he just did that in front of his son. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to be Mr. Sensitive. The whole point of why he did this, what is he doing? It made me very angry with him.
Power corrupts.
I'm just saying.
Power,
Power, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
I noticed there was a line that August said that the question was, well, you're looking for something. And he said, it's going to find me.
Yep.
So, yes.
Ultimately, it did.
Right.
If you think about it, because what he was looking for was the dagger. And ultimately, because he was out at the cabin, that cabin's been in a lot of key scenes or something with that cabin. But the fact is that he was out there looking for it. And because I wonder if he led Gold out there because somehow he kind of knew maybe that's what was going on. Mm-hmm. He knew Gold was going to follow him. He's a pretty smart guy.
So I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent, okay. but Gold was out digging.
Yes.
Was Gold digging for the portal spot?
Right.
Was he hiding the knife, dagger?
The dagger, yeah.
So, I mean, because that was one of the questions that I think everybody had. What was he out there digging for?
We're talking about in The Huntsman.
Right.
When he was digging in the episode where we learned that Graham was the Huntsman.
Right.
Yes. And that was the funny thing is we kept saying, what was he digging for? And one of your theories at that time was maybe he's looking for the portal to Fairy Tale World. And yeah, that would fit very nicely with that. And I would agree that that's a possibility. The other possibility is, but I don't know that it's a complete real possibility, is that he was digging for the knife. Here's the thing. I thought I heard him say, and maybe I need to go back and rewatch it, but I could have sworn I heard him say, I buried this here right after Regina got here.
Right.
So that I could keep her, you know, I buried it right after I got here because I didn't want Regina to find it.
Okay. All
right. So if that's the case, then he wasn't digging for the knife and the Huntsman. He's been digging for that portal ever since because he started digging after Bay went through it.
I also want to talk about the flip-flop of certain things, and I am going to skip around a little bit. I apologize ahead of time, but I'm getting old and I can't remember everything. I try to write down as much as possible. There's a lot in this episode that reminded me of at least episode 3 of the Star Wars trilogy,
yes.
But a lot of Vader and Luke. But in this case, what I'm about to talk about is Anakin.
Yep.
Now, Anakin, when he was talking to the Emperor, could twist things around.
Mm-hmm.
And Rumpelstiltskin was yelling at the Blue Fairy and said, "You stole my son.
You took him from me, yep."
And the Blue Fairy said back that you drove him away.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's looking at something from a different point of view can make the difference. It can be one way to one person.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a completely different way to another person,
right
or wrong, but it's all about perspective. And it's all about, so.
Well, and what I always say is perception. Yeah. One man's perception is his reality. Doesn't mean it's reality for everyone else. It's a person's perception is their reality.
And sometimes anger burns in something in your remembrance that's from your point of view, and it's not a complete point of view. It's just yours.
Right. Anger tends to distort reality.
Okay. Rumpelstiltskin heals now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
He had the power to do it. He had the power to do it. And I loved it because I kept saying to myself, nope, that's too easy because he's, you know, complaining about his leg giving him fits, but it's too easy for that to be a clue that he's Balefire. That just, it was too easy for me. So, but I did like the fact that Bale says, no, look, just can't we have things the way they were? I want it to go back to the way we were before that you took the power. That's all he ever wanted was his dad. That's all he wanted.
I'll get to more of that in a second. Okay. The thing I was thinking of is, this may be a stretch, but it did come to my mind, is when E.T. came to Earth, there was a couple of things that he did, and one was he healed people.
He had the ability to heal people.
And what's interesting is the Savior normally would exhibit those types of powers, healing, restoration, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But Rumpelstiltskin on the dark side did heal as well.
But okay, so here's the impression I kept getting, and I was watching this and the conversation between Rumpelstiltskin and Balefire in Fairytale Land. The conversation that kind of struck me the most was when he was reaching out to try to heal Balefire. He kept saying, "Look, I can take care of all this. Look at you should what's so wrong with our life?" And I kept thinking, okay, you love your son so much that you did this for him, but the fact is he's not happy and you don't seem to recognize that. So do you really love him Or are you just so drunk with power right now, you can't see straight? And that's what I think it became, is that he loved his power so much that he couldn't give it up. And it's true. Power corrupts. And so I think it just, it goes with the flow. Whereas, yeah, he has the power to heal, but was he really wanting to heal because he wanted to make him better? Or was he trying to impress him so much?
Right.
Get, you know, so he'd let him have the power, keep the power.
Yep.
It just, it's amazing. I don't know. I thought it was a fantastic scene.
If you, to me, if you look at Rumpelstiltskin and set him next to Regina, the evil queen.
Yeah.
They're on the same type of path.
They are. Absolutely.
And they're very similar characters.
Yeah.
And we don't know the full story yet.
Nope.
Of how Regina received her power.
Right.
We can think perhaps she killed Cora, got it from her, learned it from her, something like
that.
Right. But to me, they're very similar characters. And it's no wonder that they are attracted to each other and they also clash because they're very similar. So it's like if you had... weird thing. It's like Radio Shack. They used to have this big thing of magnets. And if you put the same side of two magnets together and you pushed them together and let go, they'd fly apart.
Right. They repel each other.
Right. And so it's the same. It's the same
thing. So you have to put opposite sides to each other because opposites attract.
Right. But they attract because they're so similar.
And I don't think it's that they attract more. I get what you're saying. I think it's attract, like you're not saying it's they're enamored with each other. No. Like it's, in love. It's
they're the same.
They bond together. They stick together. They worked well together because they're similar. They understand each other.
People that are similar find ways to come together.
Right.
And it's not, they congregate because they're the same.
Right.
So,
Right.
So Rumpelstiltskin mentioned that he led the children home. That may be something you want to highlight and remember for later. We don't know precisely what that means, but that definitely stuck out, like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yes.
And in that act of, I think, to me, in a story sense, that is probably one of the most... one of the most courageous, excellent things to rescue children out of a situation that they're either made to fight or made to work as slaves. And you let the slaves go and you send them home. So if you watch Temple of Doom, it's, you know, one of the great scenes at the end when the children return.
Yeah.
The parents obviously are
overjoyed,
heartbroken at first that they were taken in the middle of the night and all this, and but they came home. And also the freeing of the slaves in the Star Wars films also is important to Anakin as well. Yes. So I'll kind of slide that out there.
Well, and biblically speaking too, Moses freeing the slaves. So.
That's right. So Rumpelstiltskin said, I need more power. More power.
Which was very Anakin-like as well. Very, very much so, from episode 3 especially.
And Bail said, I want my father.
Yeah.
And... so this idea of the father and son, obviously, are Luke and Vader.
Right.
This clash, they come together, but then they also clash. And there's this search for the father or the mother or the family unit, or there's this search, I think, in everyone, because they want to see who they resemble. They want someone to give them structure in their life, or they want someone to answer to why things are a certain way in their life. So I was thinking about that's so many different stories, so many different movies, and in Storybrooke, you know, there it's tough to find a nuclear family. But in the case of Balefire, is he has this power-hungry man that once was his father, but he wants his father.
Right.
It is his father, but it's not.
Right.
It's a father with this dark power. So, yeah. Yep.
Yep.
So, and then Bail strikes a deal.
Yeah, which I thought was really fascinating.
With the deal maker.
Yeah, with the deal maker. So, yeah. It was really, really interesting.
Shook on it and everything.
He did, which was very interesting, too.
And unfortunately, that was the deal that he broke.
The one deal he's broken.
We see the donkey on top of August's writing and drawings.
Yes.
On the desk next to the typewriter.
Which, of course, I'm going to be honest. At that point in time, I was really concerned that I was totally wrong about him being Balefire, thinking, oh, the donkey was the thing he tripped in front of. Because it was the guy that got turned into a snail. He was leading a donkey and cart.
Right.
That's what I was like, oh, seriously? But again, red herring.
Yep.
Because where do we know donkeys from Pinocchio?
Pleasure Island.
Exactly. Yep. So I again, yet another obvious clue in my mind that he is Pinocchio.
And we just rode that ride today.
We did ride that ride today. Yeah. That was so much fun.
Yep.
It was really cute.
So, and then we see not my favorite, but one of my irritants in the show, the Cat Man. We saw the Cat Man again.
Yes.
Who is this Cat Man?
Yeah, who is he?
Maybe the Cat Man is Balefire.
Yeah, I don't think
I don't
is.
Know.
I don't think he's. I think he's too old
Poor
to be Balefire.
Anyway.
Yeah, I know.
So, and because of the power, Balefire is actually very lonely.
He is.
Because of everyone's fear of Rumpelstiltskin.
Right. Except for...
Well, what was the your little girl's name?
Moraine.
Okay.
Do you recognize that at all?
No.
Moraine is the little girl that they stole, the guard stole and took from 3 days before Balefire's birthday in Desperate Souls.
Okay.
So it was Moraine that was being taken, and Rumpel tried to stop it. And so when she saw, you know, them try to stand up against she wasn't afraid of him because she knew Balefire would stand up for her. And she probably figured if anybody could get him to back down from anything, it would be him. But obviously she didn't see what happened to Snail Man.
Right. So she saw what Rumpel did in the battlefield.
Yeah.
To stop the war and to broker a treaty.
Because he saved her. He basically saved her life.
And she called it a
miracle. Yeah, she did.
Okay. So we have these little kind of placements of these actions of healing and different things and miracle and all this.
Right.
So, and that was what Emma said to David. That's what Mary Margaret would need is a miracle.
Yeah.
So these words mean something.
They do.
So
they're very intent and very intent and purposeful.
Then the discussion about this blue star,
Rolgor. Yes.
That it was the ultimate power.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a discussion that the Blue Fairy had with Balefire.
Yes.
Is that there's dark magic, there's light magic.
Yep.
You know, like...
And I'm on the good side.
Right.
So she said.
So it's the dark side of the Force, the light side of the Force.
Exactly.
So it's this balance and this two sides. So.
Well, it's I think it's the general element of everything in this world.
Right.
If you think about it, in any world is yin yang, good versus evil, light versus dark, right versus wrong. I mean, you can't have one without the other.
Even in Lost, it had the man in black and
Correct.
Jacob.
Exactly.
And even early on, they had the light and the dark. I remember Locke was playing,
Backgammon.
Backgammon he was teaching, and explaining it to Walt.
Yeah, he was teaching Walt how to play backgammon, you know, you have to, but that's reality.
Yep, absolutely. So the father-son issues, you know, I've kind of talked about it before, but it was the opposite of Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, where Indiana Jones was looking for his father. In this case, the father had this dark curse created to find his son.
So now we know why he created the curse.
Right.
We wondered that. We wondered that. So what I thought was interesting is the magic bean. For a minute, I thought it was going to be Jack and the Beanstalk. I seriously thought he was going to be Jack and the Beanstalk. And then when it opened a portal to our world, which is what I'm pretty confident that was, I thought it was very fascinating that it was green.
From from what I recall, green in the old plays,
right,
the green light meant that it was a spirit. But right. In this case, I think it just meant it's a portal to another land.
Interestingly enough, the first thing I thought of was Wizard of Oz.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, I'm just saying Emerald City, I think that's kind of far-fetched, but it was just an interesting choice. And it may have just been that was the cool color to use. But yeah, like you said, I mean, here's the other thing too, actually. We know in old Hitchcock films, green typically meant death, or like you said, afterlife, or a different life, a spirit world. So I don't think that's too far-fetched to think that that's possible. But anyway.
If you have not seen Vertigo, you really should.
Great movie.
There is a scene where the woman who took part in this...
No, tell them. Let them see the movie.
There's a scene where a woman walks out of the restroom dressed in very nice clothes. And if you... The behind the scenes of this is there's a large piece of glass that had some green color that faded out. And so when this woman walked out of the restroom with these nice clothes on, the green or the glass was pulled up. And so it was almost like she was emerging from the beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And there was not a lot of special effects back then.
Right.
And so that was where I learned about green and spirits or the netherworld or something like that.
Right.
So, yeah. The Blue Fairy said that Balefire had darkness in his life.
In his life.
And Balefire said, well, that's my father.
Right.
And then she felt that there was still good in Balefire enough to task him to...
Well, she said there's good in him because I can his love for you. That was what she said.
Okay, so then it is Vader, period.
Yeah.
Because,
there is good in him because of his love for you. The light, that little spark or the light or something in him is his love for you, and that can shine through.
It was interesting. It was almost like the Blue Fairy was a bit of a seer because she could kind of see there's darkness in your life. Right. It was just interesting.
Well, she has to know. I mean, look, if she's the most ultimate powerful thing, you know, according to Moraine, then she would know who Rumpelstiltskin is and what he'd become, and she would be able to deal with him.
Archie, to me, was a bit like a priest.
Oh, yeah.
When Mr. Gold came to see him, and he had to kind of turn the phrase and say, well, why don't you come in and get something off your chest?
Yeah. Do you have anything you want to come in and get some other? I thought it was very fascinating. And I loved the line when he said, are you here to collect the rent? Why does everyone keep asking me that? because Mr. Gold had just gone to see the fairy, and that's why, or the Mother Superior, sorry. Which, by the way, the fact that she covered up the conversation with August leads me to believe that she knows who she is, too.
Right.
So we have, let's take a count so far. We have Regina, Rumpelstiltskin, Sydney, now the Blue Fairy.
Right.
Who else do we have? I kind of think, honestly, this is going to sound crazy, but I think, seriously, everybody knows who they are, except for Mary Margaret and David. I think they're the only two who don't know who they are.
That seems plausible.
So, I just thought that was interesting.
I kind of fell for the whole forgiveness little scene.
That's what I'm talking about.
I was resigned
for about 30 seconds to say, okay, he's Balefire. Until he started pulling the stops out, and I went, and that's why I'm telling you, he deserves an Oscar, man.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. He's positively brilliant. And I seriously started crying when he was so emotional. I think he honestly believed for a very split second that it really was Balefire. Because he didn't, who else would know about the dagger?
Right.
Who else would know? When he saw the drawing of the dagger in August's room, he was thinking to himself, I know he had to have been thinking, Bale's come to find me. Bay's come to find me. And he was all like, okay, but now he's going to be mad because I broke the curse or broke the deal. So I think he honestly fell for it until he realized when he grabbed the dagger and was like, okay, I command you, Dark One. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yep. Yep.
That was the whole thing that I think turned everything. And I honestly, when they were hugging and they were both kind of crying, I was like starting to cry. It was very sweet, very emotional, very heartwarming and string tugging. So
there was a number of words that were said between Rumpelstiltskin and the Blue Fairy. Two in particular, she said, well, a time tunnel. Time tunnel. I just went, okay. Because if, in fact, Rumpelstiltskin knows all.
Right.
And I have said from the beginning that Rumpelstiltskin can travel through time.
Very possible, yeah.
I'll just slide that out on the table there. The Blue Fairy said it. I didn't.
But wait. Didn't he also say to August, you went through time and space or something like that?
Right. That's right.
So, yeah. I find that very fascinating.
And she also mentioned a maze. So there are other ways. So we have the Dark Curse sending people. We have the Evil Queen doing her little twist with the purple smoke sending people. We have the hat with all the doors. Now we have this magic bean that can be placed on the ground and open up a portal that can send people through.
Right.
So we're seeing more and more and more and more ways that you can get from Fairy Tale Land to Storybrooke.
Right. In just one way, apparently.
So, and even at this point, we don't know who Balefire is in Storybrooke.
We don't know. We have no idea.
I don't want to go any further, and I don't want to miss the fact that we saw more of our good friends in Team 7.
Yes, we did.
In the Welcome Back Mary Margaret party. Did.
Yes.
It was so cool to see Mig on the other side in Storybrooke.
Yeah.
And Michael Coleman.
Yep. Yep.
And
Gabe Kuth.
So we saw Mr. Clark. We saw as yet unnamed
Happy.
Happy. And as yet unnamed Bashful. In Storybrooke. So I was
looking
really
to
neat.
See. Yeah, I was looking to see if any of the other dwarves made it over there, but they have not. Now, we have seen pretty much all the dwarves in Storybrooke, with the exception of I think two.
I don't remember ever seeing Mig in Storybrooke.
No, that's what I'm saying. This is his first appearance. Yeah. So we've seen Grumpy a lot. We've now seen Bashful. We've now seen Happy. We've seen Sneezy a lot.
Right. Right.
We've seen Dopey. Have we seen Doc?
Yes. He was in when Emma won
the election?
Yes.
Okay. And then we've seen Sleepy.
I'm fairly certain there's a post on a blog post where Ernst did say, and Doc was there too.
Oh, sweet.
So Doc was there, Ginger was there, and Ernst was there.
Awesome. Okay, so then we have seen all of them, because we've seen Sleepy too. So we have seen all of them in Fairy Tale, or real Storybrooke.
So, and then Emma used a word on Regina.
Okay. She used a number of words. She used a number of really cool words,
but
actually.
Normally, Regina would say, Miss Blanchard, a word. Oh. Da-da-da, a word.
Oh.
And Emma turned that back
on. A word with you in the hall. Right. Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry. I thought you were going for a different word.
And that's actually a passive-aggressive slap in the face.
Yeah, it is.
When you use someone's term against them.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Go, Sheriff Swan.
Yeah, and here we go. Three more episodes. And it appears
Yes.
that August is, in fact, Pinocchio.
Pinocchio.
It appears.
Yes. Yes, and we'll find that out next week, I'm thinking. By the way, let's talk a little bit more before we close here about the whole scene in the sheriff's station with Regina sitting there smug as a little Cheshire cat, talking about, you're getting a confession, and remember you heard it,
right,
here, blah,
right.
blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then Sydney comes across and it's like, are you kidding me? That was the most, and I love the fact that Emma didn't fall for it because, you know, first of all, she's smart, but secondly, that was the worst confession.
It was.
Ever.
The prompting.
And then I did that.
You know, Regina just, yeah. And the other thing. Yeah.
And then I did this. Yeah. Really? Really?
Yeah.
Now, I love the fact that, yeah, they probably do have Catherine's fingerprints all over chains in a basement somewhere in a cabin in the woods. But I still somehow think that she kept her in the basement where Belle is.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Or personally. Next door. Yeah. Yep.
That's what, not in the same cell with Belle, in that same hallway. I think she's collecting. That's where she collects and keeps people. Honestly, that's what I think.
All right. I think we've picked the bird clean.
Have we?
I think.
Okay. Actually, let's go back to the beginning a little bit.
Okay.
The whole David awkwardly going in and having that conversation with Catherine. I thought that was jacked up.
Okay.
Honestly. Because he's a dork. Seriously? You don't go in there and try and kiss her on the forehead when you've cheated on her and you don't want to be with her. That's just sending wrong mixed signals.
Mm-hmm.
David's kind of not being very cool right there. I didn't like that part.
Well, then he quickly goes over to see Mary Margaret at the party. So it is interesting.
Well, and I love the fact that Emma flat out just goes, yeah, she's not really up to seeing you. Give her some time.
Right.
Hey, take Henry home. And then later when he stalks her outside, I'm like, really? You didn't hear Emma say, give her some time? Dude, what is your deal?
Mm-hmm.
Let it freaking go. Now, I thought the conversation between them was very interesting when she said, there's some force. You know, he said, there's something dark here. There's something in this world that doesn't want us to be together, which I thought was just so classic. And he says, well, what do you mean, like dark force? She goes, oh, yeah, I don't know. And then, you know, but I love you. And that's what's so sad. Honestly, he was crying. And it was sad, but I'm like, dude. That whole scene just torqued me. I'm sorry. It just did. I love them to pieces. I think they're phenomenal actors. But that scene just kind of torqued me because I was like, come on, David, really? Don't be a weenie again.
Jennifer is a great actress.
Oh, my gosh. And she's phenomenal.
Just to watch her face through that.
Yeah,
it is also interesting to watch the Teflon Queen Regina never backing down, never waving the flag of defeat.
No,
she stands there and always has two steps ahead. The other thing to say, she's always prepared.
Oh yeah,
and yeah, it's very, very interesting. So. I think that's it.
I'm trying to think of anything else. I can't think of anything else either. Yeah. I really can't. I think that was it. We covered. I honestly loved this episode for so many reasons. The twists and the turns and the like when they talked about the, you know, the roll gore being something. Have you ever heard of the roll gore? I'm like, really? I don't even know what that is. It's kind of weird. I've never heard that name before. And then it turns out to be the Blue Fairy, and I started laughing. I'm going, the way she made it sound was like it was this big, nasty, horrible, awful beast monster thing, and it turns out to be the Blue Fairy. So I thought it was really interesting.
All right.
Oh, and I did love his, okay, this is a shout out for one of our little listeners here who I'm sure she'll love this. Did you dig his wheels? Rumpelstiltskin's car.
I saw the car, and I thought of a great listener. She's a great writer, by the way.
She's very funny.
She has a gift of pen and wit.
Yes, so she's very witty.
I did see that very interesting vehicle? 70s car.
Oh, so very 70s.
So
it was funny.
Fantastic.
Yep. That was a great episode. Absolutely great episode. Loved, loved, loved it. So
thank you so much for listening. Take care. Big love to all of you.
Yep.
And we will talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye. See you.
Bye.